Stephen Esposito joins us now, the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. How are you today, Steve?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Okay, so you think volatility before and after the election. Actually, we have volatility pretty much all the time these days, don't we?
Absolutely. It seems to be changing direction several times a day now as the nervousness with the election going forward and the uncertainty with interest rates backing up. All these factors, I think, are just putting investors on edge. And it's been a good year. So it's easy to take profits in a market like this and be a little bit more conservative, which honestly we've been doing as well.
Do you think the markets will plateau then after the election?
I don't know. I mean, it's anybody's guess. So what we've done is we've been taking some money off the table, locking in some really nice gains, doing some tax moves we need to do, and just get ready so we have some cash on the sidelines for what's going to happen. We don't know. And so we're just going to sit back and wait for it to tell us what to do and look for the opportunities where they are.
When you put it on the sideline like that, where do you put it?
Money market. Just simple money market. It's fully liquid, pays a very good rate of return. It's a great parking space until we decide to deploy capital, and we can deploy it relatively quickly when we're ready to move.
With various guests here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we've been hearing that strategy almost irrespective of the election. That is, you've had a nice run. If you're going to need some money, now's the time to capture it. Is that also part of your thought process?
Yeah, I think balance and everything in life is important, especially your portfolios. You don't look to go for broke, as they say, because you might end up there. We're always balanced. We're never fully invested in any one sector. Each client's different, and we treat each client individually, not, you know, in a model, so to speak. So, yes, we've always got cash available. It's just it varies from client to client in terms of how much in relation to everything else.
You don't think a 60-40 mix is too heavy on one side, though, do you?
You know what? That depends. I hate to answer that and say depends. It's the way we look at it is 60-40. If the 40% was in bonds in the last, with the exception of the last few months, from 2021 on, you got hurt pretty bad. And people saw that in their 401ks. And our 40 right now, we don't have a single bond in a single portfolio. Our 40, our 30, our 20, our 10, whatever it is money market, and has been there for
really
years now.
You've been 60 equities, and then everything else is cash. You were not in bonds.
Yeah, it could be 60, 70, 30, 80, 20.
Yeah.
But we had no bonds for 3 years now.
Why?
We've been in money markets.
Why?
We've never seen a 1% bond rate. And so bond prices were at the highest levels in history, and I didn't see the logic in locking in a yield of 1% for 5 years or 10 years in a portfolio. I said I'd rather leave it in money market, and when rates go up, and they will, I'll participate. But my biggest concern was the loss of principal someone would see either in a bond itself or a bond fund especially. And a lot of people bought things for fixed income and saw their utilities drop. They're coming back now as rates are going, but generally speaking, we were lucky that didn't affect us. So it gave us more capital to be able to buy when we wanted to.
How about this, Stephen? Fed, two cuts or one, you think, to end the year?
I hope they do two at a quarter point each is what I'm hoping they do. And we'll see as they go forward. But like you said, they're data dependent, and the data is coming in stronger than many of them had thought. But I also think there's some weak spots. So it's a balancing game, and I think you take it one day at a time. So that's how we're doing it.
Banks are doing pretty well lately, huh?
Yeah, banks actually, if you remember a year and a half ago, we had the banking crisis in March of last year, I believe it was. And what you're happening is the banks turned out to be great bargains. And as the yield curve continues to normalize, I think they'll do well, and the economy's strong, they'll continue to do well. And honestly, I think many of them are cheap, and many of the cyclical companies we're seeing start to come alive again, I think, are cheap. So if the market starts to shake off whatever election jitters it has, we're continuing to invest, and I think rates will come down, which I think will push more money into the economy and the market.
You want more conversations like this? Click on YellowstoneWM.com. That's Stephen Esposito. He's the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Okay, Steve, good job. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care.
On WGN, let's talk to Bree Fowler, senior writer at CNET. Is everybody coming to your house for Thanksgiving, Bree?
I don't know about Thanksgiving, but we are having a heck of a Halloween party this year, so that'll be
nice. You're going to go as an iPhone this year?
You know, that's one idea, but I think I'm just going to be busy taking care of everybody. The kids don't have school on the Friday after, so it's going to be epic.
Do they do that on purpose? Does your school district plan it that way?
No, actually, New York City Public Schools is off for Diwali, which is the Hindu festival, which is great. I think it's the first year they've done that, so it works out pretty well for everybody.
Air taxis, what's the news?
Well, the FAA is, you know, giving a push at these now by issuing a final rule for operating these kinds of aircraft and how pilots are going to be trained to fly them. You know, they kind of had been on hold for a while just because there weren't any regulations as to how these things should happen. This is a new kind of aircraft, and we'll see where it goes at this point.
How will those work, and where will they operate?
So these are kind of smaller vehicles. They take off and land vertically like a helicopter. I've actually seen these at CES in Vegas a few years ago, different prototypes. And the idea is that they would probably be used for short distances in urban areas just because the technology kind of limits their size at this point.
Are they electric powered?
No, these are gas. Some of them are gas. Some are looking to be electric at some point. Either way, the people behind them tout them as cleaner than jet fuel.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, it's one of those things where the airlines are investing in these because the idea is that they would ferry people to the airport maybe for regular flights and just kind of get people off the road.
I'm not so intimidated by these. Like you've heard me say, I don't want to get in a driverless taxi, but for some reason, an air taxi, would it have a pilot inside?
At first, at least. And it depends. There's different companies making different versions of these. The ones that I saw at CES a couple of years ago were designed to be flown by a pilot, but eventually they were looking to turn it into an autonomous system where they would all kind of be connected on a network. That's kind of frightening, but, you know, at the same time, kind of cool, too.
I suppose they'd be pretty expensive, huh?
I think it's one of those things that, as it gets cheaper, you know, as things take off, so to speak, it would get cheaper. But, you know, definitely something probably for, you know, the people who take helicopters to the airport.
Right, yes, which is not me. Okay, musicians from ABBA, Radiohead, and The Cure have signed a letter of protest about what?
About AI. This follows moves by authors who are worried about the copyright of their work being used to train AI. And so these musicians have also signed a protest letter. They're worried that their works are going to be mined to build AI tools. There are actually thousands of artists who've signed onto this letter. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. There's some litigation pending right now with authors, so this follows that move.
So maybe I would sample some music from Radiohead or ABBA, and then with that I could create new music? Is that the thing?
Well, I think it wouldn't even be sampling. They would just feed entire libraries of this into the AI, just like they've done with news content, with the internet as a whole, with entire
right.
books.
Okay,
yeah.
but then shy of just saying play a song by ABBA, what would the command be? What would the value of load? I've got ABBA in my Spotify, so what is AI going to do with that?
I think you could say, hey, AI, create a song that sounds like ABBA.
Oh, and make it about me or something, yeah.
Yeah, or pizza, or whatever you want it to be kind of thing. But, you know, you're using those artists' works to do that, and, you know, is that really fair?
Well, isn't the New York Times or Wikipedia or somebody suing one of these models because they said you're essentially stealing without compensation our content? If you're going to feed all this data in to AI, shouldn't you be compensating the sources?
Yeah, there was a lawsuit filed last year by a bunch of authors who were worried about the content of their books. And, you know, media has kind of taken a two-pronged approach. There are lawsuits, but also, you know, some media organizations have struck deals to license their content, so they are getting paid.
Polish radio? Are you and I supposed to be talking about Polish radio? That's not usually on my radar.
Yeah, but this kind of affects us. a Polish radio station is it's made a controversial move because it actually fired all of its journalists and replaced them with AI, which is, you know, kind of sad for people like us. They are AI-generated presenters who, you know, sound just like people, and they're doing the broadcast in our place.
Are those presenters? Presenters are what they call newscasters, right?
Mm-hmm. So yep. It's not people, though.
Yeah.
They're saying that this is an experiment, and they are virtual characters created by AI, and they are hoping that they will bring in younger listeners by speaking about cultural art and social issues that are relevant to young people. A lot of young people just don't listen to radio these days.
Yeah, right. But I suppose the novelty of it all might be a draw, but you could hire humans to talk about topics that are of interest to young people, too.
Sure, or hire some young people.
I know, really. Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts about what's happening to our industry and what's happening to the kinds of conversations you and I have. And I think mm-hmm. that we are more durable as individuals and as conversations than people might judge at first blush. But I'm kind of out of time here.
I would like to think so.
Well, no, but I mean, because I think we get hung up on the hardware. So mm-hmm. if it's not in your dashboard, or if you're not taking a transistor radio to the beach, are you interested in conversation? Are you interested in information in your community? Yes, yes, and yes. Well, guess what? We do that. So I think the challenge for my industry, and maybe mm-hmm. conversations like you and I are having, are just find the most compact way to get that to people. And
right.
And then I don't care if you call it radio or not, there's still a marketplace for these kinds of conversations. So
absolutely.
So radio won't die even if it has a different name. I hope and pray.
Yeah, exactly. I love my podcasts on the subway. I can't listen to radio, but I listen to a heck of a lot of NPR when I'm on the train.
Well, so I think that radio stations like mine, we celebrated our 100-year anniversary 2 years ago. I think I think our logo should be podcasting since 1922, because we have, because essentially, if podcast is what y'all want, guess what? That's what we do. And
sure.
Have been. Nice to talk to you as always, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
She's throwing a rockin' Halloween party. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We welcome back Greg McBride, the chief financial analyst at Bankrate, with some reminders about the savings rates of Americans. How are you, Greg?
Doing great, John. How are you?
How we doing? Give me the bad news.
Yeah, if you're feeling behind on your emergency savings, you have plenty of company, unfortunately. 62% of Americans feel behind on their emergency savings, but yet despite that, we only saw that about 20% of Americans have actually increased the amount of savings they have since the beginning of the year. A third actually have less now than they did at the beginning of the year, and about one in six are in the particularly precarious spot of not having any emergency savings at the beginning of the year and still not having any now.
What's the definition of emergency savings?
Yeah, that's the money that you can get to. It's liquid. It's in a savings account or a money market that you can get to without penalty in the event of unplanned expenses. And it's long been the Achilles heel of Americans' personal finances. But there is a pretty widespread recognition of that. We just haven't seen the much movement of the needle in terms of accumulating more savings and getting to a higher comfort level.
Is there a dollar amount we're talking about?
I think the destination for most people is going to be enough to cover 6 months worth of expenses. That's a destination. That takes time to get there, and it's in and of itself, it's a moving target as expenses rise. So I think the more important question for most people to answer is, are you even on the journey in the first place? Are you consistently adding to that savings through payroll deduction, through automatic bank transfer? Are you making more deposits than withdrawals? Is that savings balance going up over time? If you have those habits in place, that's certainly very conducive to, getting to that necessary cushion. It's just a matter of time.
But we're talking five figures then, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, right?
Yeah, very well. Very easily could be.
And I don't know that I'm including rent in that, but if I was including mortgage payments or rent, if your rent's $2,000 a month, 6 months is $12,000. If you're going to eat, you'll need another several thousand dollars. So it doesn't surprise me that many Americans, most Americans, don't have that kind of cash laying around.
Yeah, only 28% of households have enough to cover 6 months worth of expenses. What's more concerning is that about an equal percentage, about one in four, don't have any at all. Another 30% have some, but not enough to cover 3 months worth of expenses. So savings, those modest amounts can be easily wiped out by unplanned expenses. And that's why it's really important to have that automated process in place, the direct deposit from your paycheck into a dedicated savings account, automatic transfer.
So shy of that money on hand, then people use their credit cards, and that's where they go down the rabbit hole, huh?
Exactly. And we've seen credit card balances reaching record highs. They've been on a pretty steady upswing for the past couple of years, even though at a time when credit card rates have been at record highs. So yeah, that savings, that's the buffer between you and high cost credit card debt when unplanned expenses or income disruption pops up.
You charted this by generation, but also by income level. Just talk about the income levels people have and how far behind or how far ahead they are.
Yeah, I mean, not surprising. Lower income households more likely to be behind on savings. Higher income households more likely to at least be on track. They have lower levels of discomfort with regard to the savings, more likely to be in a position where they've added to the savings this year. What was really interesting, John, was when we looked on the basis of generation, that feeling behind on savings, Gen X and boomers were more likely than millennials and Gen Z to say that they were behind on their savings, even though we know from other polls we've done that Gen X and especially boomers, they actually have more emergency savings accumulated. They've been on that journey longer, more of them have built up that necessary 6 month cushion, and those that haven't, they're closer because they've been at it for a while. But having experienced those periods of income disruption or unplanned expenses that can put a dent in your savings and knowing how difficult it is to replenish that, I think that you see that contributing to some of those feelings of feeling behind, even if, in fact, the dollar amount, has been on a steady way up.
Well, this surprised me a little bit. If your income is under $50,000, 71%, according to your survey, 71% feel behind. But if your income is at $100,000 or more, fully 44% still feel they are behind on the savings curve. That's almost half of people who have high income. I know $100,000 isn't as high as it used to be, but that's the last bar you had there. And those folks are still behind as well, aren't they?
Yes, and that's been pretty consistent over time. Some of that is a byproduct of just high cost of living. You look at what inflation we've seen the past few years, it's been most significant in categories that are necessities. And so the shelter costs in particular have really increased. Another part of it too that we've seen in years past is there is a tendency for lifestyle creep. The more you make, the more you spend.
Oh, yeah.
And it's that spending that can be a barrier to building up the cushion that you need.
And we do want people with high income to buy nice houses and nice cars and go on nice trips. I mean, I think, yeah, if you have more money, you have more opportunity and opportunity to save. But I don't begrudge anybody that's making $100,000, especially if that's a household, from trying to enjoy life a little bit.
68% of economic output's tied to consumer spending. And you're right, a lot of that is occurring at the upper end of the income spectrum. So that's really what's been continuing to carry the economy and contributing to the ongoing expansion.
Your advice is to set up some sort of automatic then deposit into a savings product, huh?
Yeah, paying yourself first, having it automated through something like direct deposit or automatic bank transfer, easiest way to do it. Track your spending versus your take-home pay. And at the end of the month, if there's a surplus, that gives you a second bite at the savings apple. If you're paid weekly, or biweekly, there are going to be months during the year where you get an extra paycheck.
Yeah.
And that's money that could eventually be earmarked for savings. And then, you know, just the little one-off things, whether it's a rebate, a refund, a bonus, gifts of money you get from somebody, earmarking that for savings, those type of habits, having that in place over time, those are the type of habits that contribute to building up that savings cushion.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you get 26 paychecks a year, there's 2 months where you get an extra check. What are you doing with that money? Greg McBride, the chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you, Greg.
Thanks so much, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Ryan Burrow.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Google is putting its fifth U.S. brick-and-mortar retail store into the Oak Brook Center. Google Store Oak Brook will open up next month, and similar to the Apple Store, it will feature products shoppers can test and buy, including phones, watches, tablets, Fitbit trackers, and Nest cameras. It will be a pickup location for online orders, and will have staff on hand for customer service and troubleshooting as well as repairs. Milwaukee-based Harley-Davidson announced dismal third-quarter earnings, which included a 10% drop-off in retail sales in the U.S. and 13% fall in global sales in Q3 compared to last year. The company says it's lowered its 2024 fiscal outlook to reflect the current environment. And a new survey from Thrivent shows 2 out of every 3 Americans have concerns about how they'll manage holiday finances this year, with more than a quarter of those surveyed saying they're very concerned. The survey showed the biggest factors include people living paycheck to paycheck and increased cost of goods and services. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Ryan Burrow.
Okay, thank you for that. Now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's go ahead and start playing this oldie, which I'm sure you'll be able to name already, while I talk about the big event that is beginning today. It is National Bat Week. Eh, not the baseball kind, although that would be kind of appropriate. The furry, little, maybe scary kind. But this woman says bats are not scary.
Besides being incredibly cute and extremely diverse, bats inhabit almost every continent on the planet except for Antarctica.
That is Kim Winter. She loves bats, and she works for the National Forest Service. She is spreading the love and the word about National Bat Week.
Every year, between October 24th and 31st, we have it culminate on Halloween so that we have a lead up to Halloween where people are thinking about bats, but changing the narrative from bats are scary and vampire-ish to bats are really cool, and we think about bats in a whole different light.
Okay, and back to the song. Let's crank that up a little. There's a reason I'm playing it, which I will tell you about after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, you already know this song. It's by the Champs. It was number one on the charts in 1958.
Tequila!
And if you like tequila, you owe a big thank you to bats.
When they are coming in for some nectar on cactus and the agave plant in Mexico and in the southwest of the United States, bats will be night pollinators for that very important agave, which is used in tequila.
Bats pollinate a lot of other crops, and they are bug eaters, too.
Down in Texas, they're flying around in the night skies, basically protecting corn crops. And in Georgia, we see bats flying around protecting the pecan crop.
Bat Week has its own website, batweek.org.
We have it broken up into different sections of why bats matter, how people can take action, some of the events that are going on, where you can learn. There's also some really great videos there. We even have people reading books about bats.
Bats, they are cute and helpful. Try to remember that the next time one shows up in the middle of the night in your house and scares the bejeepers out of you. On the food calendar, well, this covers everything, I guess. It's National Food Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Miles McCabe is that West Suburban teenage sensation. Lots of followers, lots of views, who started collecting Halloween animatronics when he was 9. They did their house up so big, they've moved the whole idea of a haunted house to a commercial property. And it's won national awards. Miles, you're on WGN. I'll bet you're pretty busy today, huh?
We are always busy. We've been busy for the last few months making this thing happen, but it's super fun.
Just very quickly, tell me how you came to fame.
So it started definitely, like you said, with the animatronics. So I started with a YouTube channel, and I started collecting these Halloween animatronics, showing people how they're built, and how it's basically all just art. They're not too scary. It's all just robotics and art. And that led to a bigger thing, which is opening the haunted house, which started at our house. It was a walkthrough through our garage, and that eventually grew to a commercial space.
Your YouTube channel, though, was it always built on just animatronics and Halloween stuff, or were you as an influencer talking about or doing other things?
It was basically all Halloween. Sometimes I would do some other holiday stuff, but it would still generally be all about the holiday.
So your videos have over 30 million views. You have thousands and thousands of followers. Is this a living then? Does that generate income for you, Miles?
It does, and that's definitely what I've used to fund this project of actually opening it commercially.
You know, you could have bought a car. I mean, a lot of teenagers aren't, even if you had an interest, it's amazing that you saw a path to turn your passion into a career almost as a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, I see it as a business opportunity for sure. It's an investment, but it means I get to do what I love as a job, so it was totally worth it.
Where is the Five Points Haunted House then?
It's 241 West Roosevelt Road here in West Chicago.
And talk a little bit about, you used to decorate your family's house up and folks would come by. Is that the house that your family and you lived in?
It is, yes. So we didn't have people come inside of the house. But people would walk up into our garage. We had some hallways in our garage. People would walk all the way around the backyard. It was pretty crazy.
You didn't charge for that at your home, did you?
No, it was just show up and you guys can walk through. There was a big line, though.
Your folks were on board with this?
They were, yeah. They're also super into it, and they love this project as well.
So then tell me about this place now that you've got, the commercial property. Just give me some numbers. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's about 15,000 square feet, and it's two floors, which I love. You actually start on the top floor, and then you make your way down to the basement. So it takes about 15 to 20 minutes to walk through. We've got about 30 actors, about 40 animatronics that you'll see. So it's a pretty cool experience.
So, folks, do they buy a ticket online? Do you make a reservation? Do I show up? How do I do it?
Either way works. You can make a reservation online at fivepointshaunt.com, or you can show up at the door and buy tickets as well.
That's number fivepointshaunt.com. The hours are what?
It depends on the day. You can also check the site for our calendar. Tonight we are open from 7 to 9, and then on weekends we go till 11:30.
Scared the pants off my granddaughter if I brought her there. I'm not going to bring my 4-year-old there. Any advice for folks on that, Miles?
It definitely depends on the kid, but we do have some daytime hours for those who don't want to be full scared. So we have no actors during those hours. The lights are brighter, and you kind of just go to see the art side of it rather than getting scared constantly.
That's a good idea. How much does it cost to go through?
For the daytime hours, it's only $10. For normal hours, full scare, that's $25.
How many folks do you expect this year?
We're hoping for about 10,000. At our house, we were able to do about 5,000 in that one weekend. So we've been open a bit longer, so we're hoping for 10.
You're not one of these people that does Christmas big like that, too, are you?
No, I kind of wish I could, but we don't really have time.
Yeah, well, I'd say this is a project enough. Congratulations. So fivepointshaunt.com is where I go, right?
Correct. Yep.
Congratulations to you, Miles. Well done. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Miles McCabe out in West Chicago. What were you doing when you were 17?